Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's Fraser of Allender Institute podcast. I'm David Iser, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Miss Bowage, and also Steve Williams, who's a senior partner for Deloitte in Scotland. And today we're going to discuss the latest Fraser of Allender economic commentary, which has come out today, and various other things related to that in the context of discussions about Omicron and the Scottish budget and more besides. So first of all, without further ado, I'll come to you, Mary, and ask you to give us a quick overview of what the main findings from our commentary out today are.
Yeah, so as we do every quarter, we're producing new forecasts for the Scottish economy. Forecasting is not an easy business at the best of times, but it's quite difficult right now. So as well as these fresh forecasts, we're obviously discussing as well some of the possible risks to that forecast. So we have decided since our forecasts in September to lower growth a little bit for 21 and 22, just by a little bit. And this is really due to growth slowing somewhat in the autumn. And some of the latest data that's coming through is also suggesting that perhaps the Scottish economy is lagging behind the UK economy a little bit more than it had in the past. So as well as these new forecasts, though, we're at pains to sort of analyse how far the economy has come during 2021. As much as it can feel like Groundhog Day in December 2021 compared to last year, the economy has grown much quicker than was expected during the course of 2021 due to the success of the vaccine rollout and also more effective treatments for the virus. So it's important not to forget how far we have come and hopefully that injects a little bit of optimism in what can seem like quite a gloomy December.
Thanks for that. There's lots of sort of interesting things there for us to pick up on in the later part of the podcast. In terms of the forecast for next year, you mentioned that partly that was driven by a sort of slowing in growth in the latter part of 2021. What effect does, a couple of weeks ago, none of us had really heard of Omicron. How has that influenced the forecasts and the outlook more generally for next year?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I suppose what I would say is that it's really unknown. So we have lowered our forecast a little bit, as I said. We're now predicting, for example, that the Scottish economy will get back to pre-pandemic levels of growth by May 2022 instead of April, as we previously said. But that is really driven by these outturn data we can see, which suggest that the Scottish economy is growing a little bit more slowly. And the latest data for the UK in October, which was significantly underperforming where some may have expected. We haven't really factored Omicron into our forecasts because it's just so uncertain to know what the impact might be. We've obviously seen some economic restrictions announced this week, which may well lower the revenues for certain parts of the economy. But how much that will be a kind of temporary blip, and if restrictions are removed, that'll sort of be, that growth might be caught up on, or how much it might lower growth across 2022 as a whole. I think it's just really uncertain right now. So what we've tried to do, although this is our central forecast, is just to flag that, as ever, over the last 18 months, our forecasts right now are just really quite uncertain, and there are quite a lot of risks to the downside.
Okay, that's really interesting. I mean, clearly, some of the news in the last week or even the last few days is clearly going to have potentially sort of quite different impacts in different parts of the economy and in different sectors and so on. Steve, you work with a lot of businesses. What are you hearing about I guess their resilience generally and their hopes and fears for 2022 generally, but also in particular in the context of developments this week. What are their sort of hopes and fears, and what do you sort of see as the resilience of the business base at the moment in Scotland?
I mean, firstly, thank you, and delighted to be here today supporting the podcast. I mean, clearly, as Mary was already saying, the reintroduction of restrictions is not really the news that any of us are wanting at this Christmas time. And as you were saying, I'd very much hope it's very much short-lived from an economic business perspective, but there's probably no doubt, and there's some anecdotal evidence, that certain businesses in retail, travel, hospitality, etc., are likely to be impacted. However, I would say over the last 20 months, I mean, organisations have become, quite frankly, quite accustomed, and certainly more accustomed to adapting to these restrictions. So we're certainly of a view that though there'll be some slowdown in certain sectors, we imagine those will be fairly short-lived. If you look at the markets at the moment, they are quite sanguine about it, if you like. I mean, one, the US 500 index, I mean, it's closed at an all-time high last Friday, for instance. So certainly the markets are taking that sort of medium-term view. I mean, in terms of resilience specifically, I mean, we look at it in terms of three areas. I mean, firstly, financial resilience, because there's no doubt that firms, businesses have got capital, liquidity, and their assets in a much better place, and therefore their risk of failure, if you like, is massively reduced. And operationally, they're resilient. They put new systems into place. They're still investing in technology and digital particularly as well. And that's making them much more operationally resilient. And I think most importantly, reputationally, they've taken actions, quite frankly, which are showing the better side of business. So telcos have kept us all connected. Retailers have moved through and, quite frankly, allowed us to shop at various points over this period as well. And banks have allowed us payment holidays on our lending and mortgages, et cetera, as well. So I think reputationally, business is in a much better place as well and much more resilient at this time. So from my perspective, though no one welcomes these restrictions, in my view, I do think business is largely in a much stronger place to see through them.
That's really interesting. Thanks for that. I guess, a question for you, Mary, on the back of that. We'll talk about the Scottish budget briefly, I think, in a bit. But in the context of the developments in the last week, since the budget was published, actually, in terms of Omicron and the things that Steve has just been talking about, to what extent do you think the Scottish government will be wanting to provide additional support to businesses in Scotland in some way? And to what extent does it have the capacity to do that, given that it set out its budget plans last week, and those budget plans were basically drawn up before anyone had really heard of Omicron?
Yeah, it's a really great question, and you can see the sort of tensions between the Scottish and the UK government this week as obviously, there was the press conference by the First Minister last Friday where, you know, there was obviously going to be impacts on the hospitality industry from what was said at that press conference. And then obviously the First Minister's statement in Parliament on Tuesday afternoon, urging us to reduce socialisations and also introducing household limits if we still wanted to go ahead. In addition, there's obviously the additional measures that they're introducing, or they wish to introduce, in retail and hospitality settings, and the detailed guidance for which I we've still not seen. So these things were obviously going to have impacts on these sorts of businesses. The Scottish government have made some decisions, in order to find £100 million to create a fund for these businesses to get some support. Again, don't know the details of that yet. But we've also seen the Treasury have announced some funding to be sort of brought forward from the consequential funding that the Scottish government were already expecting. However, it is worth emphasising that this is in health And given the commitments that the Scottish Government have around passing on health consequentials to health, it's likely that's going to support the vaccine booster rollout and these sorts of activities rather than business support. So I think it was quite telling, you know, the First Minister said that they may have gone further if they had additional funding that they were able to give to businesses, perhaps in order to restrict opening hours or further restrict capacity or perhaps even shut up. But that is quite limited in terms of the flexibility, I suppose, that the Scottish Government has to use additional funding to perhaps compensate businesses in the way that they might like to do.
Right, so I guess in due course, the UK government may, I mean, it's coming under a lot of pressure, of course, to provide support for the hospitality sector in England. And if it does decide to do something, then that in due course may lead to further resources coming to the Scottish government. But for now, to the extent that there has been any additional resources for the Scottish government, these are really a confirmation of resources that the Scottish government already thought that it had, rather than it being new resources that the Scottish government wasn't able to factor into its budget plans last week. Is that basically the...
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of these discussions or arguments where it absolutely depends what you're comparing it to. So compared to the money that was given through the block grant after the UK budget, yes, it is additional funding, but the Scottish government were expecting some additional funding to flow through COVID consequentials related to COVID-related health spending in England. And I had factored that in already into its budget, which it presented last week. So from the Scottish government's point of view, it's simply bringing forward or confirming money they had already been expecting. From the UK government's point of view, it's additional funding due to consequentials. So as ever, both sides are sort of saying things that are true, but whether it's a helpful debate, I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's an interesting debate to be had again at some point about the extent to which having some ability to borrow for discretionary spending might be quite appropriate for the Scottish Government in this kind of context. But that's probably a discussion for another day, although a discussion that's probably going to be had quite soon in the context of the fiscal framework review. You mentioned in your sort of first answer, Mary, the issue that came up in the budget about the sort of slightly different outlook for the Scottish economy relative to the UK economy. Could you say a bit more about how that is affecting both the budget and the extent to which that's also fed into the Fraser Valander Institute forecast that you talked about earlier in the podcast as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So the sort of emerging story of perhaps weaker growth in Scotland compared to the UK in terms of recovery also seems to be feeding through to the outlook for earnings. And alongside the budget last week, there were updated forecasts produced by the Scottish Fiscal Commission. Now, obviously, there are lots of devolved taxes now and different bits of social security spending, for example, but the really big ticket item in terms of what determines the resources available to the Scottish Government on top of the block grant is income tax receipts, because it's such a large tax. And unfortunately for the Scottish Government, the outlook for income tax in Scotland had significantly deteriorated since the last time they produced a forecast in August. And this is driven by poorer outlook for earnings. So the judgments on the outlook for earnings in Scotland that the SFC are making is that it would be much poorer than the outlook for the UK as a whole. And this is really to do with a lot of data that is emerging around particularly impacts on the northeast of Scotland. And it does seem that outturn data is suggesting that earnings and employment in Scotland has been sort of disproportionately affected. And given that this change in the northeast obviously linked quite a lot to the oil and gas sector, is probably part of a structural change in the Scottish economy. has led to the Fiscal Commission's view that this earnings gap is likely to persist over much of the forecast period. What this means is essentially that the net tax position, as we call it, which is the difference between that sort of estimate of what the UK government has given up by the devolution of income tax compared to the actual receipts raised, is negative. So the Scottish government has a sort of smaller budget envelope than it otherwise would have had because of this poorer growth in earnings in Scotland. And this is despite the fact, obviously, that we pay more tax in Scotland in aggregate to the tune of around £500 million. So this is not good news for the Scottish budget. And it's obviously a key sort of challenge for the Scottish government going forward about how to deal with this issue about poorer earnings growth in Scotland.
Really, really interesting. I mean, this was one of the sort of known risks, as you say, when income tax devolution took place in 2017. But I don't think anyone really thought that we would see this sort of divergence in such a short space of time. And as you say, it's a really it's turned out to have a really significant impact on the budget. And that the Scottish government's income tax policy in a way sort of disguises the extent to which that is an issue, because it clearly it means that Scottish income tax revenues are higher than they otherwise would have been, and this net tax position is not quite as bad as it would have been if the same policy applied in Scotland and the UK. Well, it's been a big week of news in terms of economic statistics generally. We had on Tuesday the labour market stats out, which very broadly speaking seem to say that unemployment remains remarkably low, given what we've just been through, although inactivity is still a bit higher than it was pre-pandemic. And then on Wednesday, we had the CPI inflation data out, which did point to another uptick in the uh, 12-month inflation figure. And today we've just had, and this demonstrates that this is a live podcast, as we're speaking, the Bank of England has made an announcement that it is increasing the interest rate to 0.25%. It has just been confirmed in the last minute or so. Perhaps a bit of a surprise, do you think, Harry, if I can put you on the spot and ask you for a live sort of response to that decision?
Yeah, I must admit, I was expecting them to wait till January or February kind of time to do this, given the possible threat of Omicron and the uncertainty over that. But what they've said is that they judge that the pressure from inflation, we saw that inflation over 5%, the CPI inflation this week. They've judged that sort of outweighs the risks of the risk to the economy of the new variant. So they've decided to go now. And it wasn't a unanimous decision, but it was an 8-1 decision. So most of the MPC were convinced that this is the time to raise interest rates and go from 0.1 to 0.25 as well. So yeah, that's a really significant move by the Bank of England today.
Yeah, I have to say I was slightly surprised about that too. But there we go. So that's what happens when you do a live podcast. Well, we're recording it, but you know what I mean. We've had the result as we're recording this. We've talked a lot about what's happened in the last week or two in terms of Scottish budget and new economic statistics and so on. But there are clearly a lot of long-term challenges that are faced by the economy more generally, and that none of those have gone away in the last week or two, despite of everything else that's happening. COP26 was, of course, the sort of talk of the time just a few weeks ago, and it already seems like a long, long time ago. And clearly, climate change and sustainability have to remain a priority for the whole of society, including business. And coming to you, Steve, for a question on this. I mean, have you had a chance to consider the legacy of COP for Deloitte in Scotland?
I mean, I have to say, I mean, I spent quite a lot of time a couple of weeks ago over in Glasgow, and it was actually personally surprising, actually, in some ways, that it was very inspirational to be there and to be part of it. And I wasn't sure quite what I should be expecting. I came away with a few thoughts. I mean, one was to some of the buzzwords that came through all the time. So I have to say, hydrogen being almost the savior of humankind was kind of one of the pieces that came through very clearly. Very much conversations around the health of the oceans and biodiversity, rather than perhaps just climate and carbon, for instance. Those are areas that I perhaps wasn't expecting. And then we went to a number of what I might call side events. There's one I recall particularly, which was around the city agenda, where a number of mayors, governors from all over the world, who actually control very sizable budgets and have lots of levers around the cities that they control, were making all kinds of commitments that, quite frankly, when you add them all up, Bill, as Brailsford says, if you like, in cycling, if you add all those marginal gains together, they can actually make a huge difference together as well. And so I did become quite inspired by what could be done at that sort of more local level around the globe as well. And by the way, I also had to go to an immersion event and eat cockroaches as well. So that was really very much trying to position us all forward, if you like, into 2050 and what it'd be like to go to a restaurant at that point. So crickets and cockroaches was on the menu. Aside from that, on a more serious note, we've very much looked ourselves at what the legacy should be, and particularly locally in Scotland. I mean, we do believe we can make a real difference here locally. Obviously, energy transition and supporting our clients in oil field services, oil and gas more generally in their transition is absolutely fundamental, quite frankly. There's a huge focus, obviously, in Scotland around investment management and pensions and supporting our clients in that space around the ESG agenda and how they invest is really important. And there's all kinds of emerging businesses that are taking advantage of the ESG agenda in a really positive way. And again, identifying those and supporting those businesses, those emerging businesses are areas where I think from a business perspective, Deloitte's can make a big difference. And internally, and perhaps equally importantly, we are going to have a number of commitments that our Scottish partners will put together around a climate charter, if you like, for how we think and how we operate. And we've established a climate volunteer structure in our business as well, who are going to help us make real distinctive changes in our own business. So we have a legacy, more to be done, more to be embedded. But as I say, surprisingly inspired, quite frankly, by COP26. And quite frankly, it was amazing for Glasgow, wasn't it, as well, to be the centre of the world for a few weeks.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Really, striking, as you say, to see Glasgow as the centre of the world. And really, really interesting reflections, Steve, although, I'm not sure I'm looking forward to trying cockroaches, if that's what achieving net zero is going to mean in practice. Hopefully that's not the only way that we're going to be able to achieve net zero.
I hope so as well, David, because I wouldn't recommend them. Everything does taste okay, like chicken, yeah. But I wouldn't recommend the crunch or the legs getting stuck in your teeth, to be quite fair.
Okay, thanks. And coming to you, Mary, for the final questions. I mean, Steve's talked there about some of the longer term challenges. How well did we see those reflected in last week's Scottish budget, do you think, and what more do we need to look out for? What more does government need to be doing next year in terms of addressing those longer term challenges?
Yeah, it was interesting the way that the Cabinet Secretary's kind of framed our budget around, you know, obviously a focus on economic recovery, but also sort of the two big challenges that the Scottish Government are hoping to deal with. One, of course, around dealing with climate change and targets for net zero, but also child poverty. So, you know, the flagship policy that it was kind of trailed in advance, but it was announced in the Scottish budget about doubling the Scottish child payment is a significant policy and might be the defining one of this parliament even. So we can't forget how significant that is. And whilst it won't be enough on its own to meet the very challenging child poverty targets, it's a really important contributor to it. In addition to that, there's obviously, you know, demographic challenges in Scotland, which, you know, are quite challenging and are driving some of these issues around differential earnings that we've already discussed. And, you know, to some extent, that's been reflected in the spending choices that were made in terms of investing in health and social care and dealing with the realities of an ageing population. And finally, on climate change and net zero, you know, there were a number of announcements which were sort of, you know, re-announcements really of money that had already been announced in terms of progress towards net zero. But we obviously saw the recent Committee on Climate Change report about what the Scottish Government are doing to achieve their targets, which essentially said that they weren't kind of doing enough or there wasn't enough transparency about how action will actually contribute. So it'll be interesting to see how the Scottish Government kind of respond to that over the next year, perhaps with an update to their climate change plan to set out really transparently how the different things they're doing will actually achieve, help them achieve their net zero targets, which we can't forget are more ambitious than the UK government, hoping to achieve net zero by 2045.
Okay, thanks, Mary. I did say that was the last question, but I'll use Chair's prerogative to ask one more, because I realised that although we briefly mentioned inflation, we didn't really discuss the sorts of pressures that might create and the way that affects the outlook. So I wondered, Steve, if you had any reflections on that to wrap up the podcast.
Thanks, David. I suppose to me, though inflation itself is perhaps never a good thing, some of the drivers of it are positive. If I go back to the CFO surveys that we do, I'm very much looking back to the start of the pandemic. All these surveys were showing corporate caution, if you like, huge amount of focus on cost control, conserving cash, quite frankly, trying to make the businesses resilient. If I come back to our most recent survey, and though it was before the Omicron variant came into play, very much more about growth, if you like, and investment, taking on more people, more colleagues into people's business. And it's just such a massively positive development, quite frankly. And who would have thought we'd be in this place 18 months ago, where we've got excess demand, we've got the transition of energy, if you like, got all the positivity, if you like, around sustainability and driving change in business. And I just think that ability to invest in technology, that ability to invest in people has caused inflation and will continue, I think, to cause inflation. I'm sure that's been the driver, if you like, behind the interest rate change. But it is around, quite frankly, pay going up, investment happening, labour shortages, and digitalisation of businesses to make them more resilient. So I think there are a number of really positive things out there. And I just hope the Omicron variant doesn't take us off what I think is quite a positive path at the moment.
Okay, well, it's really nice to finish on a slightly positive note. That there we've talked about Omicron and less than positive news on the Scottish tax forecasts and interest rate hikes and even cockroaches, but it's good to have been able to finish on a slightly more positive note. So thanks both very much, Mary Spowage and Steve Williams, and we will see you at the next podcast next year. In the meantime, have a good Christmas and New Year.